And then taking a couple of deep breaths, letting go as you breathe out. Letting go of your concerns, your worries. Letting go of the holding in the body. Letting go into being here. And then allowing yourself to breathe normally. Take a moment or two, a few moments, to notice if there's any predominant theme that's in your mind now or just today or lately that's likely to reoccur as you're sitting here, planning tomorrow, reviewing the day, what someone did or said. There might not be anything particularly predominant, but notice, just recognize if there is, acknowledge if there is. And acknowledging such a theme that might be predominant for you will make you more sensitive to noticing it when it does arise in your meditation. So you maybe catch it earlier rather than being carried away by it. So if you find yourself sitting here and it reappears, be sure to note that, to acknowledge that it's appeared, and then very simply let go of it and come back to the breath. And then also at the beginning of a sitting of meditation, it's nice to relax some of the muscles that might be tense in the body. So it's also nice to kind of start from the top of the head, to soften or open the area of your forehead. As you breathe out, relax the eyes. As you breathe out, relax the nose. The jaws. As you breathe out, relaxing the shoulders. And letting the stomach be soft and relaxed. Let it hang forward a little bit. And then in a very simple way, becoming aware of your body's experience of breathing. Almost as if there's a door and you open the door and you step into the room of breathing in the body. And you can feel, sense, experience how it is for the body to breathe in. Feeling and sensing what it's like for the body to breathe out. letting go of your thoughts and concerns. Make it without striving or straining. Make the effort to stay softly connected as continuously as you can with each breath, each in-breath and each out-breath. And ever so softly naming the in-breath as in or rising as the torso rises, the chest or the stomach, and labeling the out-breath as out or falling, just as a way to encourage, very subtly and softly, to encourage you to be present for the breath. Noticing the transition from breathing out to breathing in, and from breathing in to breathing out. Perhaps as if the breath is a circle, and you're there for the full circle, the full wheel. Breathing in, transition, breathing out, transition. And the spirit of sitting is the spirit of allowing. Allowing yourself to be the way you are without judgment, without needing anything to change. However, simply letting go of your thoughts when you're caught up in them and coming back to your breath. Allowing yourself to breathe. And as you're staying with your breath, notice which seems clearest to you, the in-breath or the out-breath. And if you notice that one of them is less clear than the other, the most likely place where you're going to wander away in thought is in that part of the cycle that is least clear. So, for example, if the out-breath is less sensitive or less aware than the in-breath, you most likely find that your mind wanders away on the out-breath. Or maybe the end of the out-breath, the place where things are kind of vague. So without straining, just very softly remind yourself to stay connected to that part of the breath, the cycles of breath, which is not so clear. So that your connection with the breath is as continuous as possible without straining. acknowledging whatever preoccupation you have, and softly let go of it, allowing yourself to open to the experience of breathing. And then in the last couple of minutes of this sitting, continue to sit still with your body, not moving. But allow or accept exactly where you're at. And then within that, just stay connected with the breathing. So the breath, mindfulness of breathing, is one of the foundations for doing mindfulness work. And one of the usefulness of being with the breath is that it's one of the great ways of helping us to come and arrive to be more in the present moment. And there's an expression in meditation called arriving. And you know when you've arrived, in a sense, because you're here, as opposed to still at work. Or, you know, where you're going to be tomorrow. And a lot of what happens when you first sit down is we simply learn to relax and as we relax, to arrive and be here rather than somewhere else. And all too often, we're split. The mind is someplace different than the body. And when we're split in that way, we're fragmented. And when we're fragmented, we're more likely to be stressed. And one of the things we're trying to do in meditation or in a spiritual life is to heal the fragmentations so that the different parts of ourselves become whole again, so the body is not separate from the mind. So when you're sitting here with your body, your awareness and your mind is also here in some way and not yesterday or in some, you know, distant place. The healing of fragmentation is a lot of what can happen when we start living more in the present moment. That kind of healing of fragmented being cannot happen when we continue living in fantasy time or in thoughts of distant places and different distant times. One of the things that makes mindfulness practice a sacred practice or spiritual practice as opposed to a secular practice, many secular forms of mindfulness practice, but one of the things that makes it spiritual is that it's cultivating an awareness or a mind in which nothing is excluded. There's nothing which is considered unacceptable for awareness or for presence. And this non-exclusion, this complete inclusion of everything, everything's included, is what makes it sacred. As soon as we have a division between, you know, the Buddhists would say, as soon as you have a division between the sacred and the profane, you've lost the sacred. And so any kind of division in the mind, in awareness, there's all kinds of divisions, you know, we make. Discriminations we make between, the rug and the wall, or, you know, a dirty rug and a clean rug. And there's no judgment involved in that kind of discrimination, just recognizing what it is. But awareness itself, or our heart itself, doesn't exclude anything from what's acceptable to be present for. And this non-exclusionary, open kind of awareness is a sacred experience. It's sometimes described as having an unlocalized awareness. Awareness which is not localized anywhere. Often we feel like our awareness is localized here, and there's an inside and outside of awareness. You know, and if there's a lot of noise happening outside, you know, if you're meditating, you hear all this noise outside, oh, that's an intrusion from the outside into the inside of who I am. I'm really trying to go in here, be inside myself, and this is where really it's at is inside. Now that's then you've made a division, right? Between inside and outside. And you're going to have a lot of suffering if you think there's something outside that's going to impinge on your precious little, you know, mind and awareness. And there's many things we create as being outside and unacceptable. So sometimes physical sensations, you know, oh, that's terrible. I can't be open to that. Or emotions, oh, I can't be open to that. People, I can't be open to them. Sounds, or, you know, or thoughts. The idea is to be open and allowing everything in the field of awareness. And when everything's allowed, then we enter into a sacred realm. It's kind of feel like grace when there's no walls or divisions between ourselves and between ourselves and the world and other people. So a lot of what mindfulness practice is about is coming into the present, and the present beginning to heal some of the divisions, some of the ways in which we exclude things from our awareness. And one of the ways we do that is simply to bring attention, bring awareness to the different experiences that might arise. And there are different things that will happen that's predominant in different moments. You will hear a sound at times outside. If that's predominant, then the awareness goes and includes that by just recognizing it and noting it. So like the awareness turns towards a sound, and as long as the sound is strong, that becomes the meditation. Oh, listening, feeling the vibrations. There's no need to recognize that as a dog. It's just enough just to have a sound. Or if strong sensations arise in the body, it could be pleasant or unpleasant. We don't want to exclude it. If it's really strong, if it's more compelling than our ability to be with the breath, then the same way, to open and allow that to be the meditation. To allow those strong feelings in the body. Oh, that's what's going on. And really get to know it. Oh, hello, my friend. What's knee pain like? Let's find out. As opposed to, you know, everything else we can do towards it. Or restlessness. Restlessness, there's subtle ways in which we avoid it. And one of the ways we avoid it is moving. We fidget. It's very powerful to sit still with restlessness and simply to feel it. As soon as we start moving and fidgeting, we've actually fragmented ourselves and separated ourselves. How many of you had the experience of fidgeting with your hands while you're thinking about something else or having a conversation? You're really involved with something else, but your hands are involved with your hands. And there's a kind of fragmentation that happens there. And so when we're sitting, if you find yourself restless, to bring your full awareness to the sensations of restlessness in your body, so that comes into the inclusive kind of awareness. So if the restlessness is compelling, that becomes the meditation. When emotions become compelling, when they become more compelling than our ability to kind of be simply with the breath, then we open to that, let that become included in the full, you know, I was going to use the word cauldron, the full, you know, event. And just open to that, and the emotions become the meditation, the way we talked about it last week. And today, I'm going to talk about thoughts. And if the point of the practice is to include everything, we have to also include thoughts. And now the question is, how do we include thoughts as part of the meditation practice? A lot of people who meditate will have a little bit of an adversarial relationship with their thoughts. Partly because it's your thinking, or your actually not your thoughts, it's not your thoughts, but your involvement with your thoughts, which tends to take you away from the present moment. And if you're trying to be in the present moment, it can be, you know, you tend to blame the thing that's preventing you from doing what you're trying to do. Those thoughts, you know, I can't stand them, they're getting in my way, and they're my enemy, and, you know, and we do all these things with this attitude. But having that kind of attitude creates a division between what's acceptable and what is not. But it's quite understandable that people would have a little bit of an adversarial relationship with their thoughts, since that's what we tend to go off into. And often there's a kind of a popular assumption that meditation is about having a completely quiet, empty mind that doesn't think at all. And that can happen occasionally, the mind gets that still, but it's not really the point of mindfulness practice. It's kind of one of the many ranges of possibilities that we can experience. And one of the beautiful kind of tricks of the mind is you're sitting there very quietly and the mind gets really still, amazingly still, and there's, you know, almost no thinking going on. And then you have this thought, I'm not thinking anything right now. And what's more amazing is you'll believe it. You didn't notice that was a thought. So it gets very subtle, the practice. But the idea is, so how do we include thoughts? And the way we include it most simply is we simply acknowledge in the present moment, I'm thinking. Because the principle of mindfulness works on this very simple, amazing ability that humans have, where they can think and know they're thinking. They can feel and know they're feeling. They can see and know they're seeing. Right? So this knowing is a really precious part, and this, we want to open this knowing so that it becomes kind of really panoramic and allowing. But it's this ability to know which is really the key. So as soon as we know that we're thinking, we're not involved with thinking as powerfully as we were before. There's actually some, in a sense, kind of a stepping back from it or opening up wider to it, as opposed to being preoccupied in it, entangled in the thoughts, right? So one of the beautiful, again, examples is people will also think that thinking about the past, thinking about the future is not here now, so therefore it's bad. You know, be here now is a simplistic slogan, right, of the spiritual age. Be here now. But I'm thinking about the past, so I'm not spiritual. what's the beauty of this is that in mindfulness practice, we're not necessarily asked to stop thinking about the past or the future, as if that's a problem and trying to deny it and stop it. Rather, what you want to do is to wake up and notice that what's happening here and now is a human being who's thinking about the past. Right? Because thinking about the past is happening in the present. As soon as you're aware that in the present I'm thinking about the past, then you know what's happening in the present moment. And this possibility of a balanced inclusion is possible.
And is this where the naming comes from?
The name, I don't know if it comes from...
Is it related to that?
It's related. Naming can be very helpful. Knowing and naming are two different things. But we use a naming of the... we name what we know as a way of kind of more fully acknowledging it, really being honest about it. Sometimes, you know, if you honestly state something to a friend, it becomes more real or becomes more... sometimes we free ourselves of a burden if we can say it to someone, even if we've already admitted it to ourselves. There's a marvelous power in naming things. But also it's a way of, again, of strengthening this kind of observing stance that is not entangled in it. So we know, oh, I'm thinking about the past. And you might simply quietly say to yourself, thinking, thinking, thinking. And that kind of then helps the disentangling. The disentangling is different than getting rid of. Because we're not trying to get rid of our thoughts. It isn't like thoughts are the enemy or the problem in meditation. But what we want to do is to wake up so that our wakefulness is greater than our involvement or preoccupation with the thoughts. Maybe the metaphor that's used in Buddhism is the lotus, the white lotus. It grows out of the muddy ponds. And it comes out, as it opens its petals, there's no mud and water on it. It's pristine, but it grows up out of the mud. So the same thing with us. We're kind of entangled in all the mud and all our stuff. And it isn't that we're trying to get rid of all that, but with awareness can really seeing clearly what it is and not being caught up in it, becomes like this beautiful lotus that kind of blossoms above the water. And so we're not trying to get rid of anything, but rather kind of blossom and become, in a sense, larger, let awareness become larger than it, so that we're not lost in it. Isn't that beautiful? So beauty, one of the beauties of mindfulness practice is a practice that doesn't deny anything. Nothing is denied about our human being, human nature. And as I said last week, a beautiful place to discover this is in the context of sitting meditation, because you don't have to respond to anything normally. You just sit here and you can just allow and include everything in the present moment. And then how it translates into your daily life, well, that's a big issue, this practice. But at least you start here, discover it here. And if you have the ability here, a lot of other things will become clearer. So again, the practice is a practice of recognition, just recognizing what's going on. And one of the things we can recognize that's happening in the present moment are our thoughts. And we know thinking, thinking. And just that's you know, just that. That's probably enough just for now. What I would like to do, if we can kind of just take a couple of deep breaths, clear out all the things I said, and then... if you can remember to 20 minutes ago, how was it to do that meditation where I kind of guided you with the breath and different ways of paying attention to the breath? And how was it to sit there, sit for 20 minutes like that? Yes?
Usually I can do it and observe what my mind is doing and put it aside and come back to breathing. But this time there was just one thought in my head that just kept ringing and ringing and ringing, coming back in my head. What do you do with a thing like that? I mean, I was aware of what it was, but it was just, it wasn't going to be put aside.
It becomes the meditation. And so what you do is you fully turn your awareness to the event of thinking. And what's interesting is the content of thought, the story that's about, is not so important from the point of view of meditation. But you want to turn your attention to the thinking and recognize, oh, thinking, thinking, and just kind of quietly thinking, this is what's happening. And notice the event of thinking is happening in this corner of the universe.
In this case, it wasn't, I wouldn't call it thinking.
What was it?
It was a name. I have a friend who's very seriously ill, uh-huh. Possibly dying, and it was his name.
He kept coming back over and over again.
Okay.
Well, that ties into another point around when thoughts are, and thoughts or something like this is very compulsive, very repetitive, keeps coming back over and over again. You can let go of it, come back, go back to your breath, and then it re-arises right away or whatever. Then there's almost always an emotion that's connected to it, that's associated with it. And in a sense, the emotion is what's fueling it, what sparks it. And if you just leave it at the realm, just noticing, thinking, or name, or remembering someone, remembering, it really overlooks that the predominant thing that's happening is an emotion. In your situation, if your friend is sick, maybe it's worry or grief or I don't know what it might be, love. And so what you want to do then is you want to turn to that predominant emotion and make that the meditation. And what that allows, again, is not to get rid of it, but when you can know clearly and see what it is for itself, then you're less likely to be caught up in it. And then whatever is supposed to happen with that emotion will happen. And more often than not, if you're not caught up in it and entangled with it, and which we often are kind of almost unconsciously, if we're not, then it doesn't persist. It tends to kind of finish whatever it needs to do and then settle. So a classic example of this is people who plan a lot in meditation. You know, you're sitting here, you stay with your breath, your mind goes off to planning, and you after a while, you kind of, you know, you notice thinking, you come back, and off you go to planning again. And you see it enough times that then you can kind of, rather than just kind of do a generic name like thinking, you can name it more precisely because you've seen it so many times. You know, this is planning, so you note planning. And sometimes naming it more specifically, like planning, or remembering, or fantasizing, can help, the specificity can help disentangle us a little bit. But if planning reoccurs over and over again, often there's a level or layer of apprehension or fear from which this kind of planning thoughts is arising. And if the fear is going unacknowledged, then the chances are we're entangled with it. We're caught up in the fear. We're involved in somehow with the issues around fear. But as soon as we can drop down to the layer of the emotion and engage ourselves and recognize honestly, oh, there's fear here. To that moment, we begin to disentangle ourselves. And then we can have a wiser relationship to it. So it's a disentangling process. At the same time, it's an inclusionary process. As soon as we're entangled in something, we've excluded other things, some things. So it's a beautiful thing, you know. So actually, deeper intimacy can arise when we're less entangled. Does that make sense to you? Yes.
I can kind of get a sense of with her thoughts and with the emotions, you kind of want to recognize it. You don't want to hold on to it. You just want to kind of let it happen.
Yeah.
But I still feel like there's like a with thoughts, you want to be careful because you can get carried away with thoughts. It seems like much easier than you can with emotions. And the third one is bodily stuff, like knee pain. The impression I got from a couple of weeks ago is that you want to, you know, you say make the knee pain the focus of the meditation. It's like to really see what the knee pain feels like. Well, if you have a thought and you start planning, you're not going to really see what that planning is like and kind of get into it. Uh-huh. So it's kind of a different approach to pain than it would be to a thought.
It's not so different, but the trick or the art of including thoughts is not to be concerned about the content of the thoughts. So we don't have to get involved in the content at all. The content is irrelevant from the point of view of the mindfulness practice. It's simply the event of thinking we want to acknowledge. Thinking is happening. And so we just simply acknowledge, oh, thinking. And actually, you can actually investigate it more carefully. If our involvement with the thinking is pretty mild, just simply noticing thinking, and it'll kind of, you know, just that noticing or naming it will usually just dissolve it. Just kind of often just seeing the thoughts head on kind of dissolves it. But sometimes it doesn't. It's more compelling. When it's more compelling, there's other things we can investigate besides the content. So one of the things, if it's compelling, is you can investigate the energetics in the body around the thinking. If it's very compelling, it's usually also manifested in the body some way. A tension or tightness or pressure around the forehead or inside the skull or tightness in the neck or the shoulders, or, you know, people, you know, bunch up their eyebrows when they're thinking hard, right? So there's often ways in which it manifests itself in the body energetically or physically. And then you can bring your attention to the physical component part of that. And just hang out with that, just like you would the knee pain. Or there might be an emotional component to those that thinking. And then you can bring yourself and just really be with the emotional component, just like you would with any other emotion. So there are things you can investigate. But we don't usually pay attention so much to the content. We actually kind of we free ourselves from the content. And what we're becoming aware of is the process and not the content.
So in a way you kind of want to bring yourself back to the emotional and the bodily sensing are more fundamental to the experience than the...
If it's compelling, if it's really compelling, the thoughts are there, you want to spend some time kind of exploring it or investigating it in a very allowing way. And these are areas which we can connect to. And again, whenever we connect to the physical aspect of an experience, we're there with the experience, we're kind of allowing the experience to be there. But the physical experience is often a way of not getting caught up in it. Like if you experience the physical side of fear, it's easier to let the fear be there without getting, you know, worried about it or whatever we do to it. Same thing with thoughts. If thoughts are really compelling, if we feel the physical aspect of the thinking, or then we're more, less likely to be caught up in the story because it's a bodily, you know, the bodily part of it.
Or the emotional aspect of thinking can bring you out.
Also can bring you out of it. So sometimes just simply noticing thinking and seeing it head on is enough. We're disentangled. And sometimes you have the experience of just like, you know, clouds passing in a drift, you know, empty sky. Just, oh, there's a thought. You know, I'm not involved. It's just I'm seeing it's a thought and just goes by. And, you know I'm thinking. It's just, you know, it's like a cartoon bubble. You know, it's just, no. And other times, you know, you feel like, you know, that the world of thoughts is, you know, dense, like the ocean you're swimming in. It's just thoughts and thoughts everywhere and thinking and, you know, it's not like thought bubbles. And so then it might not be simply just seeing it, you know, as clouds and empty sky, but it's really feeling the energetics of it, what it feels like in the body, what it feels like emotionally to be caught up in all these concerns. And then we slowly disentangle ourselves. Yes?
Well, I thought it's sort of a moment of choice. It seems like if I notice a thought, and for me I'll think, oh yes, this thought, I'm starting to get wrapped up in it. And then there's this choice, okay, I'm going to go back to my breathing. Mm-hmm. What's the basis? Is that a real choice?
It's a very good question. In a pragmatic sense, if it just seems kind of easy to come back to the breath, usually that's usually the best thing to do, just come back and keep cultivating stability on the breathing. That's mostly what's best, especially for people who are you know, more beginners. The practice of mindfulness itself, in a purest sense, you wouldn't come back to the breath. You would simply, if thought thinking becomes predominant, you go and become aware of the thought, and you know thinking, until it dissolves. And once it dissolves, it isn't you go back to the breath, you simply become aware of the next thing which is predominant. And then the next thing is predominant. So all you're doing is like you're sitting, the sense of meditation is kind of like you're sitting in this one-room house with all the doors and windows open. In the middle of this one-room house, there's this wonderful recliner. And you're sitting there completely at ease and just kind of enjoying the breeze and it is kind of there. And you notice that certain things fly in through the door. Oh, here comes a friend walking through the door. Isn't that interesting? Here comes something, a bird coming in through the window. Isn't that interesting? Oh, that bird, you know, is staying, so I think I'll just, you know, be with it for a while. You know, allowing it to be there. You don't get the broom and try to chase it out. In Buddhism, the metaphor of doors and windows is that of the sense doors, the eyes and the ears and the tongue. And so we sit here with the awareness resting in its recliner. And we keep all our sense doors, in a sense, open, though we keep our eyes closed in this tradition in meditation. And then whatever becomes predominant becomes the meditation. So just we let it come to you. Let it tell you what you should be meditating on. You're being informed what your meditation should be. That's the pure experience. Most people, when most people living kind of a you know, who are beginners or living a very active life, it's better to have some anchor to help you get in the present moment, because that pure sense is if you're really able to stay in the present moment. But most of us drift off so much into the, you know, whatever, that just come back to the breath and really develop some stability on the breathing. Does that make sense? Yes.
There was a dog barking and there were people coughing and traffic, and I could keep that as a predominant focus, going from one external sound to the other since they were predominant, and that seems to take away from coming back to the internal part.
Right. Again, we don't need to separate very sharply between inside and outside. If sounds outside, so-called outside, are the predominant, are really what's, you know, compelling, they become the meditation. And that's not a, you know, a bad meditation. It's just, and then when the sounds pass away or are no longer compelling, then you might become, then you can go back to the breathing, or you become aware of things inside.
So that's not a distraction.
It's not. See, the beauty of this practice is there's no such thing as a distraction. Imagine that, huh? It's just something else to pay attention to.
So how can you really just go by it is a distraction?
Sorry?
I mean, how can you really, it is annoying to you?
Well, then you're annoying. If your annoyance becomes stronger than the sound, then your annoyance becomes the meditation.
But then when you practice, should you, you know, not
I'm
go
serious.
Out of your way to practice in a quiet
what?
Room? When you practice, should you not go out of your way to practice in a quiet room?
Well, we don't have to be purists. You know, be a little bit pragmatic. You know, say if you were trying to do is be in the present moment, and so a little bit you can kind of, you know, make some simple choices like a quiet room or time of day when it's quiet. But realize that you're not being so pure when you make that decision. But it's useful to do that. It's pragmatically useful to do that. But once you're sitting here and you made a commitment, I'm going to sit here for 20 minutes or half an hour or 40 minutes or an hour or whatever it is, then just take what comes. And sometimes we don't know. When I was in a monastery in the plains of Thailand, I was given this little cabin to meditate in day and night, 16, 17, 18, 19 hours a day. I would do my meditation in this little cabin, and it was a hot season in the plains of Bangkok. It was incredibly hot. I'd be sitting there dripping in sweat, and then on top of it, at some point there was a farmer's field. Well, there's a farmer's field just outside the like literally like 2 feet away from the back wall of the cabin, and the farmer had decided to put in this huge trench for some kind of irrigation pipes or something, you know, huge. So he had this huge bulldozer, you know, backhoe, I guess it was. And I could feel it for days, getting closer and closer. And as I was getting closer, you know, the day that it was kind of working nearby, the whole cabin was shaking. And I was sitting there hearing, shaking. So you never know what's going to come. But once you've kind of set yourself down, within the realm of reason, you know, if your house is burning down, you know, you get up and do something. But within the realm of reason, you sit there with it. Yes?
I have a question about the barking dog and annoyance. Because, you know, obviously when you're sitting here trying to meditate, you hear the barking dog and it becomes annoying. Aren't we supposed to see the annoyance and realize that it's just a product of clinging to the want for quiet or something?
You could see that, yes.
Are we supposed to think that much or not?
No.
Think that much?
You don't need to. It might be obvious that you're clinging. If it's an obvious realization, just accept the obvious realization and go back to your breath or just whatever. But you don't have to analyze and figure out what, you know, am I clinging to my breath? And I've heard that people do that when dogs bark, and is this what I'm doing? You know, you don't have to do that, to go that far. But if your reaction to what's happening is the predominant thing, your reaction becomes the meditation. So if you find yourself sitting here and you get bored, you can't stand it because you feel bored. And you might think, well, boredom is not the meditation, so I don't have to pay attention to the boredom because boredom is not the meditation. So, you know, I just let the boredom take over and I'm just going to keep trying to be with my breath. That's misunderstanding. Your relationship to the experience becomes, if it's predominant, it becomes the meditation. So if the boredom is really strong, the boredom becomes the meditation. Now, what does boredom feel like? Oh, boredom feels like, you know, this empty feeling of, you know, in my chest. And what does that feel like? It feels like You know, the energy is dropping. And where does it feel like it's dropping? And suddenly you're engaged in it and you're no longer bored. Or if you find yourself really annoyed with the sound, and the annoyance is really what's compelling, then you want to drop into the annoyance. And where's the annoyance? So I feel myself tightening up and contracting. Where am I contracting? Oh, I'm contracting in my shoulders and my chest. And what does it feel like to contract? And can I... Well, I don't like to contract. Not liking. So, I'm a human being who doesn't like being contracting. Okay. And so you just notice all these things, as opposed to trying to change and try to get rid of things. But you have to include your relationship as part of the study. Does that make sense? Yes.
I was going to ask you about timing. I sometimes sit to meditate for, say, half an hour, and I'll open my eyes after 20 minutes and say, all right, that's it. I'm done. And I was wondering whether you recommend that you actually push yourself and do what you're committed to do from the start, or whether it matters at all.
I recommend to people who are relatively new to meditation, which means like for the first 3 or 4 or 5 years, especially, to choose a time when they sit down. They're going to choose a certain length of time to meditate. To commit themselves to staying to the end, because something different happens when we commit ourselves and. The experience of meditation is outside of our choice. Because if we have a lot of choice, then after 20 minutes we get up, right? But it might be you missed a wonderful opportunity to really get to know yourself in a new way. And the fact that you're uncomfortable or bored or restless doesn't mean that it's, you know, it's bad meditation. It just means there's some, you know, it's good stuff there. So commitment can be used that way as a very useful way. For example, one thing that's useful is to have a kind of commitment to sit every day, maybe even at the same time every day. And so your commitment is there, so it's outside of your choice anymore. Because if it's in your choice, the tendency for some people is either to sit only when they're feeling good or only when they're feeling lousy. But the idea of meditation is to include everything about ourselves in the experience of meditation. And if it's outside of our choice, and we just sit no matter what, over time, all of our inner life, all of our humanity gets a chance to go through the practice. Yes?
There are times where my breathing is very easy and very centering, and there are times where I'm so tight it's like I'm barely breathing if I think about it. If I try, since you asked about, you know, focusing on breathing, I found it very difficult with you saying, you know, whatever you're saying, and me like looking at my breathing and going, wait a second, I'm not breathing. And I'm wondering, I mean, granted, you're not going to be there every time I'm sitting. Maybe good in this case. But would it be better to focus on the tension that's causing me not to breathe?
Exactly. Probably the tension is then is the predominant thing. And so you just go feel the tension. Just feel the tension in the body. And don't worry about the breath. It'll come. You know, and just be with the tension. And if you do this, and then you might see that, you know, it relaxes after a while, and you come back, and the breath is more natural again. That's exactly right. So, however, if you do this for a while, and you find that you just seem to be tying yourself up in knots, you know, because, you know, around the breath, then maybe what you want to do is kind of forget about the breath for a while, and just do listening meditation, and make listening the primary. Instead of having the breath be the primary anchor for being in the present, do make sounds be the primary anchor. You're just listening to sounds, you know, whatever sounds arise and pass, and just the mind wanders away and you come back to sounds. And the sounds is a much, for some people, is a more neutral experience than the breath. For some people, the breath is not so neutral. Last one, and then we'll sit.
I noticed in tonight's meditation that I sort of decided that I have a hard time focusing on the breath. Something that I heard just to do one thing at a time. And so I focused on whether I was going in or I was going out, and I kind of said to myself each time, I only have to focus on going in or going out.
You mean the in-breath or the out-breath, you mean?
The in-breath or the out-breath. And I found that I could focus much more readily on the breath, and I could exclude lots of everything. And I'm wondering what the Buddha's meditation would say. Because it's sort of a technique to stay.
So let me see if I understand you. So when you're breathing in, you were there fully for the in-breath. When you breathe out, you checked out, or you were there fully for the out-breath?
Fully for the out-breath.
That's perfect. That's perfect. And there is a, in doing mindfulness practice, we give some priority to that kind of one pointed or that kind of primary kind of attention to the breath. Until, just what you did, until something else comes knocking and saying, hey, pay attention to me. And you'll know when something wants your attention. You know, your knee hurts or your back hurts or, you know, or the fire alarm goes off. It goes off, and you know, or whatever, something will happen. And you're not going to sit there always with your breath. But until that happens, and you can be with the breath in a very simple way, make that the primary place to be. So, before you do anything, just close your eyes as you are and notice for you right now, what's the level of intensity or energy associated with the part of you that thinks? Is the thinking part excited and active? Quiet and relaxed? Is there energy in the body that seems associated with this thinking part? Many times people feel it in their head or in their forehead. Sometimes the thinking part, there's an upwelling of energy. The energy goes up into the head. And as you're sitting here, what's the tone? What's the tone of that inner voice that does the thinking for you? Is it harsh and judgmental? Is it tentative? Is it smooth and soothing? Is it calm and spacious? Is it fast and nervous? And if you can notice the tone of that inner voice, can you just feel that part of your body that seems associated with that emotion or that tone, as a way of compassionately and allowing, just sensing and feeling that quality within you. And then take a couple of deep breaths as a way of clearing out, letting go. And then allowing yourself to become aware of your breathing. And we say in English that we're meditating, which implies that we're doing something. And it might be more accurate to say in English, we're being meditated, because it's we're allowing some process that's unknown to ourselves to unfold. There's a receptive quality to meditation. So we intimately, without strain, receive the in-breath. Receive the sensations of out-breath. And when the mind, when you notice that the mind is preoccupied in thoughts, very softly, gently label it thinking. And if it's easy to, open again to receive the breath. When we say going back to the breath, it's almost like we implies jerking the mind back. You don't have to go back anywhere. It's more like you open again to receive what is already happening. Your mind drifts off, you're no thinking. And then you open again to notice how the breath is. Thinking and knowing you're thinking are two different things. The center of gravity of your attention, the place where you rest, should be in the knowing, thinking, thinking, hearing, hearing, rising, falling. And when your thinking is compelling, don't be bothered by your thoughts. Simply notice it more fully, feeling it in your body. If it's very compelling or very repetitive, perhaps you can feel the emotion that's connected to it. Noticing your emotions. Noticing when your relationship or your reaction to what's happening is predominant. Your judgment of it, your aversion to it, your holding on to it, your resistance, boredom, excitement. Very quietly and allowing. Name and know that. If you can simply rest in the knowing, you can heal all fragmentation. our thoughts and ideas are some of the most insubstantial, ephemeral aspects of our experience. Yet it is often what we hold on to the most, holding on to the invisible. When we hold on to thoughts really strongly, sometimes you can feel the grasping. And just allow yourself to feel it. Be very honest. Be in the knowing. Where are you right now? The practice is to moment by moment rest in the knowing of what's happening, the knowing of the breath, the in-breath and the out-breath. So I'll end with three points I'd like to make. One is you received now quite a bit of the instructions for mindfulness over these four weeks, and we have one more meeting next week. And you've heard instructions for the breath, for the body, for emotions, and today some instructions around thoughts. It's very easy to take all this and make it very complicated. You have to do all the stuff and keep all this in mind. The idea is to keep it actually really simple. Remember, you're sitting upright in an alert way, but your mind somehow is at ease, like it's in a recliner. It's open and all the doors and windows open. And you're really simple. And it's really, the instructions are really helping you to pay attention, to notice what's coming to you, not that you have to figure things out. So you stay with the breath until something obviously comes to you and wants to pay attention to you. That's one thing. Keep it really simple, the practice. And err on the side of simplicity, if you need to, as a rule. The other thing is, the second point is, a little different way of talking about the practice is we pay attention to the breath until something makes it difficult for us to pay attention to the breath. That which makes it difficult for us to stay in the present moment, that is what we pay attention to. Isn't that great? That which is making it difficult for you to be in the present, that's what you pay attention to. When you pay attention to it, you're in the present moment. So it's easy. Right? And if that seems too complicated, you just, forget it. But and the third thing is, since today was kind of instructions on thoughts and thinking, and thoughts are incredibly powerful in our life, insubstantial as they are. Manindra, who is an Indian Vipassana teacher, made a famous statement which gets repeated a lot in these circles. And he said, "The thought of your mother is not your mother." So relax around your thoughts, is the idea. Don't hang on to them so tightly. So I hope today has been useful, and thank you all, and I'll see you next week.